Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harris. I'm very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. I want to play this audio for you guys. The national pundits, they're kind of giving up on Buffalo. Here's Damian Woody.
They've royally messed up their window. They've had the AFC East locked down for 6 years.
Yep.
And they have nothing to show for it. And guess what? You just mentioned it.
Yep.
Here are the Patriots. They're back again. And so you look at Josh Allen, you look at this game yesterday, you know, you heard whispers, oh, it was the Miami Dolphins. This is not a trap game. I'm sorry. Buffalo, you're not even leading the division, and it's a divisional game. You got your butts whipped against the Miami Dolphins that we had written off dead to rights.
Yep.
Fired their general manager.
Yep.
Their coach is basically out the door, and all they did was whip your behind down there in South Beach. This is not a bad game. This is more of a bad sign for Buffalo, in my opinion.
That was Damian Woody of ESPN talking about the Buffalo Bills. I want to play one more cut for you guys. Here is Colin Cowherd. He thinks that the Bills are wasting Josh Allen.
And here's my thing with Sean McDermott. Something's always leaking, and it takes him an entire offseason to figure it out. You don't have an offseason. You're wasting Josh Allen's prime. The running game took years to solve. Now, the passing game, what? I have to wait until next year to solve it? I mean, Justin Herbert doesn't have his tackles or his number one running back, and Jim Harbaugh's got him in a three-game winning streak. Their offensive line is atrocious. Three-game winning streak. San Francisco has Mac Jones quarterbacking. The receivers aren't healthy. Where's Ayuk? Where's Ricky Pearsall? Mac Jones yesterday went 33 of 39. Buffalo has been mostly healthy, schedule third easiest in the league, and yet they have one win over a team with a winning record. So in their three losses, they've averaged 15 points. With Josh Allen and James Cook, how is that possible?
So that was Colin Cowherd talking about the Buffalo Bills, and he feels like the Bills are wasting Josh Allen's prime. So you know what I did? I took a trip over to Bills Reddit. I was just curious. And usually when we do this, we go through the post. And I was kind of starting the process of getting some posts together so we could sit here and we could mock the Buffalo Bills, right? But you know what I saw? I saw someone create a meme. And the meme was the Buffalo Bills cycle featuring Josh Allen. I was like, you know what? That's it. This is what they have as the cycle. After a weird week one, the Bills will dominate for the next 2 to 4 weeks. They will start to lose confusing games in October to inferior opponents. Fans believe the sky is falling. They'll beat the Chiefs in the middle of the season in the CBS 425 slot. Go on a dominant run in the back half of the season. Beat a wild card team, just happy to be there, then lose in the divisional round or conference championship due to a turnstile defense. Sign players who could blossom in our system or wash defensive stars. Draft okay talent in the first three rounds and then find the most random gem in the sixth. Make fans believe that this is the year that they can win it all, and it goes in a circle. You know what? That actually kind of sounds like the Buffalo Bills. I mean, I hate to disagree with them about them, but tell me what part of that sounds incorrect about the Buffalo Bills. This is the state that they've been in. They are a very good team. Even now, I don't think they're going to win their division. I think the Patriots are going to win that division. But I mean, we're talking about a team that will have won their division in 6 of the last 7 years, been to a couple AFC championship games, won playoff games, home, road. The Bills have been a good football team for the last handful of years. I mean, Damian Woody is right. They don't really have much to show for it. You know what the Bills have to show for all their success right now? Some "We Won Our Division" t-shirts. That's what they have. They have some "We Won Our Division" merch is what they have. People ain't checking for that. So, I wish I could argue with Buffalo about how Buffalo feels about Buffalo, but I don't know if I can. This kind of has been the cycle. And last thing here on Buffalo, and then we can move on, as they are moving into a new stadium, are they going to continue with what they've been doing? Now, we obviously got a lot of football left, so I'm not here, "Oh, this guy's getting fired, this guy's getting fired." But if this season ends how I think it is going to end for Buffalo, where they are going to have basically the same season for, what, 4 straight years, 5 straight years, do you think you're walking into a brand new $2 billion stadium and everybody gets to go over there? I don't know if that's the case. Rob, what do we say on this show? Eventually, when things are the way they are, you got to hand the public somebody. I mean, they're not handing the public Josh Allen. I don't think they're handing the public their general manager. I'm going to guess that they're probably going to hand the public their head coach. And we all know that will be a very coveted job. Look, you're in a winnable division. You got a franchise quarterback who's under 30 years old. Like, there's going to be a lot of things to love about that Buffalo Bills job if it becomes available. But if this is the exact same season over and over and over, I don't know if you can walk into a brand new stadium, and I think we know prices are going to go up, personal seat licenses. I don't know if you can go into that same season with everybody coming over there. Somebody's got to pay for a disappointing season, and disappointing by their metrics.
I've kind of felt for a while like eventually Sean McDermott's going to get run out of Buffalo. Now, I will say, I can't believe he's lasted this long. And that is not an indictment on, I think he's a bad coach. I just think Sean McDermott is fine. I don't think teams are good because of Sean McDermott, but I think teams are never bad because of Sean McDermott. So I'm surprised Sean McDermott has lasted this long in Buffalo, because I do believe they got to be handed something. But man, maybe I'm just speaking for myself. I think Joe Brady is going to get a college football job at the end of the season.
I think Joe Brady's going to be the head coach at LSU.
I actually think Penn State, because he went to Penn State. But he's getting a college football job. Yeah. They're going to have to hire a new offensive coordinator. If Sean McDermott hires, I know Brian Daboll's going to be the hot name among coordinators because he was up there and successful. If he hires Daboll and then Josh Allen looks like Josh Allen again, because this year he's been pretty mediocre, does that get the heat off him? Does the fact that his OC is probably leaving the season's in give him a chance to kind of reset and restart? Or is it actual hot seat time for McDermott? Because I'm surprised every year he survives, but he's going to get another offensive coordinator hire in about 3 months, I think. Like, is that enough to survive in advance? Because I don't think the Bills are Super Bowl good, not as they're currently constructed.
Yeah, I mean, this Bills team, they're just going to, and it sounds crazy to say for a team that I think can win 11 games this year, but are you winning a championship with that defense and or the parts that you have put around Josh Allen? I don't know if that's the case. Or is it one of those scenarios like we saw, 25 years ago with Tampa Bay, where Tampa Bay had Tony Dungy. They were a very, very good team, and they just needed somebody to come in and get them over the hump. They needed different. Sometimes you just need different. You need a new voice, a change of direction, some new motivation, whatever it could possibly be. Could you see Buffalo move in that direction at the end of the season? We'll obviously see how things have to play themselves out. I want to play this audio for you guys. This was Andy Reid as he met with the media. Here he is talking about Chris Jones. He was asked if Jones needs to do more. Here was Coach Reid's answer.
I think, we all need to do better. I would say that Chris is always striving to do better every day. I mean, that's what's made him such a good player. Again, he's the guy that they're going to focus on. And if you're getting a double team, that's who's getting doubled. And so that's, he'll get his as we go forward. It's just important that he stays consistent and keeps working hard.
Let me give you a toss up right now. Maybe this is an over under. If I set the over-under on Chris Jones sacks at 4.5, you taking the over or the under? Right now he's at 2. So last year he had 5.
So you're asking me if he's getting another 2.5?
Total okay. On the season.
So not
last four. Year, Chris Jones had 5 sacks. He's currently at 2, and the Chiefs have played 9 games. So he's on that pace right now. He is on a pace for another 4, 4.5 kind of season. This is why I reject this notion that these numbers come from, oh, well, he's getting double teamed. I mean, he hasn't been getting double teamed his whole career. Like, if you are someone that believes that, hey, Chris Jones would be putting up these numbers, but offensive lines are putting so much emphasis on stopping Chris Jones, that's why the numbers are down. I mean, we've seen some years where you really should have been doing that then if that was the case. Because I'm looking at it. Chris Jones in 2022 had 15.5 sacks. In 2023 had 10.5 sacks. In 2024 had 5 sacks. Right now he has 2 sacks. Now, I feel like with other players, we could acknowledge what could potentially be happening and you are seeing a declining, regressing player. But if you think Chris Jones can bounce back, perfectly fine. That's why I'm throwing the question out there. I'll set the over-under on Chris Jones sacks at 4.5 for this season. He's currently at 2. You taking the over or the under? Because right now, 4.5 sacks feels like it is exactly the correct number on what it should be for Chris Jones. And I know we count pressures and all of those things. You ain't paying Chris Jones one of the 10 highest paid defensive contracts in the league to get you 4.5 sacks.
I think you have to take the under. And it's because of something Mitch Holt said on the show back on a week ago Monday, the 3rd. Mitch pointed out that in November, the Chiefs are going to face a wave of elite offensive lines. The Broncos are a flawed offense. Their offensive line is good. The Colts, one of the reasons why they are good this year is their offensive line is really good. The Cowboys, another flawed team, but they have a good offensive line. So do I think in a run of a back half of the season is going to feature better offensive line? He's put the Broncos twice, by the way. They'll feature better offensive line play to go up against. He's going to get red hot. I think the math says he would end up under at 4.5, which is a really disappointing season from your Hall of Fame defensive tackle.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now. If you were looking at defensive contracts in the National Football League, these are the top 5 defensive contracts in the league. Micah Parsons is number 1. Aiden Hutchinson is number 2. Nick Bosa is number 3. Myles Garrett is 4. Chris Jones is 5. If you want to go down, TJ Watt, Max Crosby, Nick Bonito with the Broncos. So we're talking about high-end pass rushers, edge rushers, where the expectation is not just you create pressures. No, it's you go be a double-digit sack guy. It is you dominate and change games. Do you guys feel like that's what's happening with Chris Jones right now? Because Micah Parsons, we've seen him have those kind of games. He just had that a couple of weeks ago against the Cardinals. Aiden Hutchinson, we've seen him do that before. The game against the Ravens, he forced the fumble. They won the game because of it. Myles Garrett, phenomenal player. Max Crosby, Bonito. I think Bonito right now should be the defensive player of the year, the way that he has played and really being the catalyst when it comes to that Broncos defense. The Chiefs are paying for an elite defensive player. They are currently not getting an elite defensive player. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. Tune in Mondays at 4 to hear the play-by-play voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. If you guys are just tuning in, we're talking about the comments from Andy Reid. He was asked, do the Chiefs need to get more out of Chris Jones? Here was his answer.
I think, you know, we all need to do better. I would say that Chris has always striving to do better every day. I mean, that's what's made him such a good player. Again, he's the guy that they're going to focus on. And if you're getting a double team, that's who's getting doubled. And so that's he'll get his as we go forward. It's just important that he stays consistent and keeps working hard.
So that was Andy Reid talking about Chris Jones. When he says he's going to get his, I'm trying to figure out what that is. I'm trying to figure out maybe what the baseline expectation is for Chris Jones. Because I would say it's easier on the offensive side. Like if I tell you coming into a season, let's fast forward to next year, what are your expectations for Patrick Mahomes? I think at this point, the expectations for Patrick Mahomes are to throw for 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns every single year. You are an elite quarterback. This is what the numbers we expect from elite quarterbacks. Now, if you do more than that, around that, but I think that's generally the expectation going into it. Travis Kelce, hey, what's the expectation? Hey, get about 850 yards, have a handful of touchdowns. Rashee Rice, like we're calling Rashee Rice a wide receiver number one. We know what wide receiver one should look like as we are settling into where we're about halfway done with this Chris Jones contract. That's probably the best way to put it. Maybe that's why it's such a topic. We are essentially halfway into the Chris Jones contract. He is on the team for the rest of this year, clearly, and next year. You are not getting rid of Chris Jones. Now, at the end of next season, the Chiefs are going to be faced with the decision about what they want to do, but what does the next half of this contract look like for Chris Jones? So far for Chris Jones, he has played in 24 games under this contract. He has 7 sacks and 50 tackles during that stretch. He is the 5th highest paid defensive player in the National Football League. I think if I ask you guys, do you feel like the Chiefs have a top 5 player on defense in the league right now? I don't think many people would say yes to that question. So I set the over-under. If I tell you right now, Chris Jones sacks at 4.5, you'll be like, oh, Carrington, that's too low. He had 5 last year, and he has 2 so far this season. I don't think that's low. That's basically what his pace is right now is 4.5. 5 sacks so far this season. Rob, you said you would take the slight over on this one?
Slight under.
The slight under on this one. So you think he gets 4 sacks?
4 sacks, yep. What is playing in my head, what's ringing through my head, is what Mitch Holtis said in the show, I believe it was last week, about offensive line play and how the Chiefs how the Chiefs are gearing up to play a string of great offensive lines in November, and there's really no rest for the weary in the second half because they are playing good offensive lines. So if you're telling me Chris Jones at the halfway point, or we're calling it the halfway point, 9 games in, is it 2.5 sacks? And now the offensive line competition is going to crank up maybe not a full notch, but a half notch. I think he's going to heat up. I don't think so. I think the math shows he's a 4 sack guy. I think it's slight under, but I'm going to take the under on 4.5 this season. I haven't seen enough to believe, oh man, he's tearing it up in the second half.
Yeah, and someone sent in the question about we should restructure Chris Jones' contract at the end of the season. Do you guys want to be locked into Chris Jones for longer than they are right now? Because I think when we say these terms restructure, I think people just think that players are making less money. I mean, no, the money is being taken from somewhere, and the player, for the most part, is not going to create a situation that makes it easier for you to cut them at the end of it. So right now, Chris Jones has a cap hit of $23.6 million. Next season, Chris Jones is going to have a cap hit of $44.8 million. His cap hit is going to be $48.2 million next year. So the Chiefs, let's say the Chiefs just got rid of Chris Jones, they would just save $600,000. I don't think they're making that move when it comes to that. He's going to be on the team next year. And if you restructure it and try to get his cap number down, you simply just push the problem into 2027 or 2028. The best thing for the Chiefs to do is play out these first 3 years, and then the contract has a natural out. In 2007, Chris Jones is going to make $28.2 million. And it's also important to note, they've already restructured Chris Jones' contract one time. They can get out of this contract in 2027. So probably around the time when we know where the next stadium is going to be, that's when they can make the decision about what they want to do with Chris Jones. His cap hit in 2027 is $38 million, and they can save $19 million by getting him off the team. So you can suggest trade or do this thing. I don't think that's in the Chiefs' best interest. The Chiefs' best interest is to let this thing play itself out and try to get either more contribution from Chris Jones, or you need more contribution from the players around Chris Jones. If you're in the group of people that believe that the reason this is the case, that Chris Jones is getting double teamed and triple teamed and he is getting all the attention in the world, then George Karlaftis should be dominant then. That means George Karlaftis is seeing pretty consistent one-on-ones. Charles Aminihou should be dominating now at this point. Mike Dana should be. If you're telling me that there's two or three offensive linemen on Chris Jones, somebody is unblocked or somebody is one-on-one and has a chance to really, really generate some pass rush and put up some numbers. So at this point, to me, the question is not about how do you get out of this contract. The question is, how do you get the most out of Chris Jones' contract?
I also think people don't understand, and it's not the text line's fault, it's no one's fault, because as much as we try to act like the salary cap is, you know, a simple, pretty simple process, it's a very complex process. But when people say restructure, I think what they hear is get the player to take less money because he's not performing, when in reality a restructure is an accounting trick. Like, the last big restructure the Chiefs had was Juwan Taylor. Do you know what they did for Juwan Taylor to get his cap hit down on the back end of his contract? They gave more cash up front. They turned his salary into signing bonus. Here's cash. That means your cap hit in 2026 comes down and you become cuttable, but the player gets more cash on hand. Do that to Chris Jones, you'd have to pay out a lot of cash today to get that number down, and that's where the cap and all the things become a problem. So a restructure is not just, hey, he's going to take less money out of the kindness of his heart. No, a restructure is an accounting trick that is built into the cap, and players like Juwan Taylor don't have a choice in doing it.
Someone just texted in, the Chris Jones contract was one of Brett Veach's biggest mistakes in the last 5 years. They should have let him go before the contract and traded him for a first or a second round pick. I think what is happening with Chris Jones is, I don't think in a lot of instances the second contract is really the big thing. Like, Rob, you and I were talking about the Rashee Rice contract a couple of weeks ago. I mean, if the Chiefs pay Rashee Rice for a second contract and he's 25 years old, I mean, that deal can't really get you into that much trouble as long as he's healthy. Maybe you overpay, maybe you underpay, but I think everyone would agree having 26-year-old Rashee Rice on the team is not that big of a deal. I think what we were always wondering with Chris Jones is, you were not paying for 27, 28-year-old Chris Jones. You were paying for 30, 31, and 32. And some things about football remain true. It is a game that is best played by people between the ages of 22 and 28 years old. And when you get outside of that 28 years old, especially in one of these kinds of positions where you're on the trenches, your body's beat up, everybody ages at a little bit different, it is more of a dice roll once you get to that third contract than anything. So I certainly understand why the Chiefs did that deal. And I'm not ready to say that paying Chris Jones was a massive, massive mistake. I'm not saying that yet at all. I'm not ready to call it that. But, I mean, this team has invested a lot of money in Chris Jones and George Karlaftis. So if you have invested a lot of money on your defensive line, I don't think that you can say right now that one of their biggest weaknesses is their defensive line. It don't work that way. It makes sense why one of their biggest weaknesses is running backs. They haven't spent any resources at running back. They have a seventh round pick, another seventh round pick, and a guy who was a free agent in August that is currently getting carries for this team, and a guy who we've never seen before in Elijah Mitchell. It makes sense to me why they struggle in running back. They haven't spent any money there. They've spent a lot of money on defensive line, so it doesn't make sense to me why they struggle there based on what the resources they've spent to try to get really good defensive line play.
Listen, I was someone who's a proponent of the Chris Jones contract, and I still think it was a smart decision to pay him. I think they were a little late to the game, and I think that holdout, I feel like they thought they got the better of Jones, and then they began that incentive-laden deal, and then he hit basically all the incentives, and the Chiefs felt like there was still more there. But if we're going to have a conversation about bad contracts, we can have the conversation. The Chris Jones one is not looking good early. But to your point, he's not the only one on the defensive line. If we're going to point out bad contracts in the D-line and players not living up to their number, can we point to George Karlaftis' contract? Which I'll be first person on to raise their hand, like, I may have been wrong about that. Now, it's also extremely early in the George Karlaftis contract, but some of the Chiefs' offseason plans were, eventually Chris Jones is going to fall off the books and we're going to have locked up George Karlaftis. He's going to turn into a true pass rusher type of one, and he is not that guy in 2025. So the Jones contract does not look great. And if you're the type of person that wanted to trade him after the season where he sat on the in the suite and watched game one, you might have been right. So it goes. George Karlaftis was a popular contract extension last offseason. He has not lived up to it in iota. Again, early, but actually, a long way to go.
I actually disagree there about George Karlaftis for this reason. I think George Karlaftis is a fine player. I think the contract then makes you think that he is now going to take some next level and next leap. What if this is just what George Karlaftis is? Like, what if this is what George Karlaftis is?
Then his contract is too much money. That's fine.
I hear what you're saying, but I guess I would make this argument for George Karlaftis. If you are a guy that can consistently get somewhere between 8 to 10 sacks, you are just a guy that's going to get a decent contract in the league because there's so few of those guys that are available. So I'm not here to defend the George Karlaftis deal. You remember, I was never a huge fan of it from the very, very beginning. But pass rush is one of those things that if you want a 24-year-old healthy pass rusher, a 25, 26-year-old guy, those guys, A, don't really come available for cheap in free agency. And if you try to trade for those players are then expensive. Like, those kind of, like, George Karlaftis type players, I'm sorry, there's not a lot of them in free agency. There are not a lot of teams that are letting 25-year-old proven pass rushers, not calling them great, but I think we can acknowledge at this point, George Karlaftis has shown you that he is a proven pass rusher. He had 10.5 sacks, 8 sacks, he currently has 5. Let's say this season he finishes with 9.5 sacks. Teams just pay a lot of money to that player. Like, that guy just gets a good contract because, again, of his age and his production.
That's fair. Now, and the way Karlaftis' contract is structured is that it's not really a lot of money till the back end, if I recall. I'm trying to get the computer to pop up on SpotTrack. I remember there was it basically was like buying out arbitration for a baseball analogy with George Karlaftis, but there was money on the back end. I'm just saying, if you are the type of person that is frustrated with Chris Jones for not living up to the contract, I think it's fair to point to the other contracts in that D-line, and Karlaftis is one, and I think the Chiefs' plan was for Karlaftis to take a step forward. You're right. Gregory Rousseau was the example I used in the offseason, and Gregory Rousseau types don't hit free agency. When they do, they get paid. That's just, it's the nature of the position that they're in. But I would say Gregory Rousseau is having a better year this year than George Karlaftis, so you're getting a little more of what you paid for. Again, it's the way it's structured is kind of an oddity with Karlaftis, but the totality, you are not getting the final number, at least not yet.
Yeah, and I guess last thing here on Chris Jones, and then we can move forward, is I keep seeing a lot of people talk about a restructure. If you were at the point where you feel like every offseason you got to restructure a guy like Chris Jones in his 30s, I would say then that's an acknowledgement that was not a good contract. Chris Jones got his contract. He got paid 5 years, $158 million on March 9th. On March 12th, or March 9th of 2024. On March 12th of 2025, they did a restructure. I don't think the expectation every offseason should be we are moving money around when it comes to Chris Jones' contract to try to make this thing work. Like, at some point, it has to have an end. It has to have an end. And every time that they restructure Chris Jones' money, it then makes it more and more guaranteed is what it does. So basically, for next season, because they restructured it, he gets a $16 million roster bonus that has already kicked in because he was on the team this year. So that's what the trade-off is when it comes to a restructure. The restructure is, of course, I'm happy to restructure the money, but 2026, I get $16 million for simply being on the team. And that money's going to kick in the moment I agree to do this. So, yes, there was a roster bonus that was paid to Chris Jones. Listen to this. He got a $15 million roster bonus on the third day of the league year in 2025. He then got $16 million guaranteed that same day because he agreed to a restructure that freed up the cap space. So, yeah, if you want to restructure Chris Jones' deal, I'm sure he's going to do it. He's then going to sign up for more guaranteed money in 2027.
Making him uncuttable in 2027.
For sure, 100%.
And that's the thing. And again, I don't want to get in the nitty gritty of the cap. Just 10,000 foot conceptual view. Restructures are not the team goes back to you and says, we want some money back. Restructures are you get some immediate cap flexibility, but you have to pay a toll. And yeah, the toll is usually cash.
It's very simple. Best way of putting it is you help me, I'll help you. Like, I'm not moving the money around just for blanks and giggles. Like,
the money still gets paid always. The money's always paid.
If you want me to move some money around, I'm happy to move some money around. But the team is asking you to do something. I need something too. Sure, if you want me to come in on Christmas Day, I'm happy to come in on Christmas Day. You're not going to pay me the same amount of money you pay me to come in. No, I need time and a half. I need this. That's what a contract restructure is. I'm with you. I think people hear restructure and they just think, oh, he's willing to take less money. No, it comes at a cost to the team. I just told you what the cost was. They guaranteed that the Chiefs got to pay Chris Jones $16 million in March. So I don't think you're paying Chris Jones $16 million guaranteed and then trading him to somewhere else. No. He's going to be on the team next year. That's how this works. Rob, let's get back to Monday Night Football and the end of the game. The end of the game was just weird. Here's Troy Aikman.
Can't believe they're going for it here on fourth down. Hurts airs it out. A.J. Brown, it is broken up. And the play made by Valentine. And now, because they went for it, there's 27 seconds left, but there's life for Green Bay. They've got good field position, and they don't need much to get McManus into field goal range.
No, I don't know. I don't know what the thinking was here. You stopped the clock. Could have ran it down, and wow.
So if you guys missed the end of Monday Night Football, and I'm not going to blame you if you missed the end of Monday Night Football. Here's the thing, and we'll get back to the actual decision by Nick Sirianni. This is the thing that I just want football to be treated like the other sports. If we spent all day hyping up a baseball game or a basketball game or a soccer game or any other game, hey, it's the two best teams. They're going to play on Monday Night Football in a historic venue. I think America tunes in for that, right? America has shown you they tune in for events, right? When Caitlin Clark was dominating at the University of Iowa, we were watching women's college basketball during this time. We tune in to events. Monday Night Football is an event, especially when you got two of the better teams. When it's a stinker like that, it never gets held against football. If that was a basketball game, the sentiment would be, that's why I don't watch it. That game was awful yesterday. It was one of the worst games of the season. I'm serious. I don't care how good the two teams were. I don't care how exciting the ending of it was. I don't want this soul like it was some great defensive back and forth on what it was. That's not at all. And not even close to what it was. The game was just awful. I do not understand what happened at the end of Monday Night Football. Not at all. And the people in Philadelphia, they don't get it either.
What the hell was Nick Sirianni doing at the end of that football game? What the hell was that? All right, let's unpack it. Fourth down. 27 seconds to go. The ball on the Packers 35. Okay, the Packers have no timeouts to go. It is a field goal game. The only chance the Packers have, and we watched their offense the whole night struggle to move the football.
They were sputtering. Yeah.
The only chance they have is to get the ball in field goal range at a manageable field goal. And Nick Sirianni and the Eagles offense decide to throw a bomb on fourth down. And give the ball back to the Packers on the 35-yard line. It was a ridiculous decision. Not even defensible. It was a ridiculous decision. It gave the Packers life. And if McManus didn't have a bad quad, he shouldn't even be playing. He's hurt. The Packers kicker. They might have gone to overtime for no reason. That is a clear punt. It is a clear punt, and even if the ball goes in the end zone, and I know that's a weird part of the field where a touchback is probably likely, I mean, you could take the delay of game, give the Braden Mann a little more space, but whatever. Even if it goes in the end zone, you are taking 15 yards and making them have to go 15 extra yards with no timeouts. Hugh, it was one of the most ridiculous end-game decisions I have ever seen a coach make. There was no reason for it.
People are texting in. 10-7 Broncos Raiders on Thursday night or Monday Night Football's 10-7 game, which was worse? Don't make me choose. I think the Broncos Raiders game was worse. I think it was worse. At least last night got compelling at the very, very end of the game. Like, at least it got interesting at the end of the game. That Broncos game, that Raider, that's, no, please don't make me do that again. That's an evil question I was asked on the text line. That's what that is. That is an evil question to have asked. Do you guys think that Nick Sirianni thinks he's smarter than everybody? Because I don't mind people that think they're smarter than everybody else. Like, that's not a, That's not as negative of a trait to me as people make it seem like it is. But sometimes I would say there's nothing wrong with going with conventional wisdom. There's nothing wrong with conventional wisdom. There's nothing wrong at times with doing what everybody does. And to me, in that situation, I would say that Nick Sirianni suffered from an illness that inflicts a lot of coaches. You tried to come off as smarter than everybody else. Sometimes just kicking the extra point or taking the field goal is the right thing to do. Sometimes just punting the ball and making things more difficult for your opponent is the smart thing to do when they don't have any timeouts. There's a fine line between stupid and aggressive. There's a fine line between cute and creative in the National Football League. A lot of it is results oriented, but on fourth and six from basically the middle of the field, why you would attempt a deep pass to A.J. Brown just makes absolutely no sense to me. At some point, Rob, we got to talk about Jordan Love and what has happened, because 3 years ago, Jordan Love threw for 4,000 yards and 30 touchdown passes. So far this season, that is not the same quarterback that began this journey with the Green Bay Packers. We got to figure out what happened. Coming up on the other side, we will talk about a topic that was perfectly designed for this show. I'll explain. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. So I want to play this audio for you guys. And coming up at the top of the hour, Matt Verderama, Sports Illustrated, is going to join us on the show. I want to play this story for you guys because sometimes there are stories that were tailor-made for this show. You guys might remember back in, I think it was like March or April, we were going through the story of the man who had fallen in love with ChatGPT, and he was in a love triangle with ChatGPT and his actual wife. I would say that was a story that was created specifically for this show. We also did a fantastic job covering the New Orleans prison escape. There's prisoners everywhere running around the streets. We have another story about a man who is facing a lawsuit. You might be wondering, what is he facing a lawsuit for? Let me play it for you.
Woman scorned, you could say, and now she wants payback. She wants money after she says her now ex wasted her childbearing years. So here's what she wrote to the Telegraph's Moral Money Advice column. I've been in a relationship for just over 10 years with a guy I had hoped to marry. He called it off a few months ago. He tells me he feels at 38, as though he still has a decade of enjoying his lifestyle and powering through with his career, and he's not ready for marriage and children. So here I am at 34, eggs twitching, ready for the marriage and parenthood stage of life, but unexpectedly single and emotionally devastated. The woman says she feels as though he owes her big time and she wants him to pay.
Okay, so there's more to this story. To give you guys a little bit of backstory, she is suing him to pay for fertility treatments, freezing her eggs. Her stance is, you wasted my time, you wasted my prime years, I don't have a lot of time left, so now you need to pay to make sure that I can have these things down the line. Now, I want to be very, very sensitive to this woman's situation because I understand. I get it. I want her to know that I get it, that I understand. But Rob, this is the thing. I'm just going to guess at some point in having conversations with this man over your 10-year relationship, he told you exactly who he was. And I think we know that sometimes women hear this and they take it as a challenge in feeling like they can change us. You tell her, oh, I don't want anything serious. She continues to move on. And then you and her get to a point where she's mad that you didn't want anything serious. Well, I told you from the very, very beginning, I find this hard to believe that this man was in a 10-year relationship with this woman and was leading her on to think that he wanted the two kids with the white picket fence and the beautiful house in Overland Park. And then one day woke up and said, nah, I'm good. I think he had been telling her this for years. And I'm thinking she was guessing eventually he'll turn around. But y'all been together for 10 years. At some point, there is just a natural evolution in your relationship, I'm guessing. I don't know, Rob. I'm just guessing here. I'm spitballing here. But when you've been together 4 years, you and her are laying there and you just finished watching Stranger Things and she asks you, so what are we doing? And you're like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, we live together. We have a beautiful home together. No, what are we doing? I'm assuming that conversation popped up at year 4. And then I'm guessing whenever you went to somebody's Christmas or Thanksgiving, I'm guessing a family member asked you that. Hey, so when are you guys going to get married? Then your sister start getting married. Then your best friend start getting married. Your cousins get married. Now she's comparing you to all of them and wondering when you and your boyfriend are going to tie the knot. And this entire time, he's happy to be playing Madden down in the basement, minding his own business. I refuse to believe that she didn't know. I think she knew this entire time. And maybe one day it just hit her. You know, she was on Instagram. She saw that her enemy, that girl she hates, now she sees that engagement picture from her. She sees the ring. She sees her looking all happy. She realizes she doesn't have it. They have a big fight. They now walk away. You don't owe her any money for that. I'm dismissing this case. I wish I had a gavel. I'm on his side. Where are you ruling at on this, Rob?
First things first. The term she used, eggs a-twitching.
Eggs a-twitching is crazy.
I don't like that term. I don't care for that term.
Eggs is twitching.
I understand what is trying to be conveyed here, but the terms eggs a-twitching really, it sent a shiver down my spine that I didn't enjoy. Secondarily, I would also dismiss this case because it feels like that's dating. I'm sorry that you were together for a long time and it turns out you guys weren't on the same page. Maybe they had talked about it. Maybe they hadn't. But that's dating. Maybe this is just me. But Carrington, I'm betting you have a friend who was with someone for a while. And eventually, the relationship ended. You're like, oh, why did it end? We weren't on the same page. That happens. I don't want every time societally that, hey, me and girl X, we broke up because we just weren't on the same page. Whether it be we didn't agree on marriage, we didn't agree on kids, we didn't agree on, you know, whatever the big ticket item, but you still had fun, you enjoyed your time dating them, should not open you up for a lawsuit. Like, let's change the scenario. Let's say you start dating a woman and you're like, you really like her and you've been dating for 3-4 years and you guys have an apartment together and she wants to go move up and get a house together. And you say, no, housing market's crazy. I'm never buying a house. I'm going to be a renter forever. She eventually breaks up with you. Sad. Everyone moves on their way. No one regrets the relationship, but you just move on. It didn't work. Can that woman now sue you for back pay of rent because she wouldn't be paying a mortgage? Of course not. So no, I'm sorry that she is losing her childbearing years because she dated someone who's not on the same page. That's dating sometimes. That's relationships. Work on your communication skills. Don't send him to the Fifth Circuit judge. That's just no.
And right now, she's still got time. She's 34. She's not 59 years old. She's still got a lot of time in this scenario, right?
I mean, yes and no. I would tell you, the average doctor will tell you that if you're over 35, you are considered, and I'm air quoting here, an at-risk pregnancy.
She better hop on Hinge. She better get to it. She got a little bit of time to still find Mr. Right. Things happen when they're supposed to happen.
But you can still have a kid after 35. At risk doesn't mean it's impossible to have one. It just means there's more potential problems. But you can't sue and be like, well, the years I wanted to have a kid are gone forever. What if she had been single? Would she have sued men at large?
This just doesn't seem right to me because women are allowed to change their mind and we accept it, right? You're allowed to agree to something. And then in the middle of it, say, okay, I've changed my mind. perfect. And you should be allowed to walk away, say no. You should be 100% allowed to do it. That's what it sounds like he did in this scenario. We were in a relationship. We were working towards something. One day I woke up, and for whatever reason why, maybe he's got a new secretary that he thinks is attractive. Maybe he just got tired of hearing her nag about something. I don't want to be with you anymore. He gets the ability to walk away from that relationship. Now he got to pay for her eggs to be frozen. No, this ain't right, man. We got to stand up for this. We got to fight the power. We got to rally around this brother. We got to rally around this brother. Because I'm guessing a lot of men have been in this situation. Maybe not for 10 years. 10 years is a while.
I feel like a lot.
10 years is a long time.
A lot might be a big number.
10 years is Chris Jones' entire career. He's had three contracts since then. 10 years is a long time. But a lot of people have dated somebody for 3-4 years. Things didn't end up working out. And you're right. Like, you get a severance package at the end of this breakup. That's not the way it's supposed to go. You don't get a severance package at the end of this relationship. No, not at all.
And you're right. It doesn't matter the why. It sometimes relationships don't work. You don't get to just seek retribution at the end. Like, even if the roles were reversed and the guy was like, I don't know. I want kids. You don't. I'm out. Does he get to sue her? No, it's just that's dating. Sometimes it doesn't always work. It's a hit and miss game. It's battleship. Sometimes you hit the ship. Sometimes you don't. It's just life.
I'm with you, man. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Matt Verderame of Sports Illustrated. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.